Exodus 2, 1 to 10. The text that covers this, I think, best is Psalm 2, 4. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. And the context of Psalm 2 is this. The nations are raging. They're furious. They want to get rid of God. They want to get rid of his Christ. They won't have this God reigning over them. And he that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. I say that that text in that passage covers this admirably. Because what is going on in Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 to 10, is the next step in that glorious history, God's history, covenant history of redemption. And it all comes to focus upon one little family, Levite family, and one little Levi boy. The purposes of God, the eternal purposes of God, the Abrahamic covenant, the Noahic before that, the Abrahamic covenant, the Mosaic covenant, the Davidic covenant, and the Christ's new covenant, all passing through this one tiny Levite boy. And all around him, the hordes of Egypt want to destroy this boy, as every other boy. The Lord shall have them in derision. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. Let me look at the events. Now a man of the house of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. Now that's real newsworthy stuff. That's headline material. A Levite man and a Levite woman have got married and had a baby, and that baby's a boy. What news? My friend, thousands could say the same. It's so insignificant, so unnecessary to report, and yet the history of God's covenant purpose is channeled into this seemingly everyday, ordinary, it couldn't be more ordinary, event. The boy is not even the eldest in the family. Aaron is older than he. There's a sister Miriam as well. Who would imagine, who could imagine that this event, a Levite man marries a Levite woman and they have a baby boy? How could anybody imagine that in that boy, here was the greatest leader that Israel would ever know, probably the greatest leader of men? This man would be responsible, in course of time, for leading 2 million Israelites out from the bondage and slavery of Egypt, across the Red Sea, through the wilderness of sin, up to Mount Sinai. This man would be given the law of God. This man would lead the Israelites for years, this 2 million people and more, through the wilderness, right up to the borders of the Promised Land. Who could have imagined it? And yet that's God's purpose. I can see the irony of it. It makes me smile with pleasure and with faith and with delight. God sits in the heavens and he laughs. Look at the insignificant way he brings this covenant history to its next stage. Look at the parallel with Christ being laid in a manger. And isn't it wonderful the way God works, brother and sister? Who could have imagined it? Now it says here that the child was a fine child. The mother saw that. Hebrews 11:23 speaks of it. So does Acts 7:20. This child was no ordinary child. This child was a fine child. Or as the footnote in Acts 7 says, he was fair in the sight of God. The mother saw something in him. He was no ordinary child. Now, I don't know what that means. But when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. She kept him. She did not do what Pharaoh had demanded. 1:22. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people, every boy that is born, that is to the Hebrews, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. I presume that when Aaron had been born, that edict was not there. But now the edict has come in. So God, in ironical fashion, brings Moses into the world at the most impropitious time. It's unpropitious. Aaron had been born, it seems, at a time when he could live. But Moses had to die. But no, Moses did not have to die, because God was going to work his purpose out. How strange are God's ways. How wonderful are God's ways. Brother and sister, this is most encouraging to me as a believer. I hope it is to you. God's ways are strange indeed. God's ways and purposes are remarkable. Well, the mother keeps the baby for 3 months. But then what? Well, she can't go on keeping him. So she goes to the Nile, and she floats him on the Nile in the reeds. Instead of the Nile drowning him, which was Pharaoh's intention, the Nile bears him up and keeps him alive. God's intention. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. Is it not a wonderful thing that the very Nile which should have drowned this boy is the very means of his living? Now, some speculate about why the parents did this, and some even accuse them of sinning here, for their foolishness and so on. Some think there was some scheme that the mother had in mind about Pharaoh's daughter. I myself, going on Hebrews 11, think it is that by faith, without fearing the king's edict, the mother cast the child on the water by faith. And Miriam stood at a distance to see what would happen. The mother placed the child in the little basket and left it on the Nile in the reeds. And the sister stood and watched. Then it just so happened Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe. God's purposes are ripening fast. And her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket, she opened it, the slave girl got it for her, and the baby was crying. And she felt sorry for him. This is one of the Hebrew babies, she said. Throw him into the Nile. No. Then Miriam spoke up. Verse 7. Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew men to nurse the baby for you? It's all hanging on a thread here, my friend. All the covenant history. This baby could be drowned. Within a few seconds, the baby could be cast into the depths of the Nile and lost forever. But by faith, the mother had done this, and Miriam is there. I believe it was no accident. She placed the child, she put it among the reeds, and God was working his purpose out, and Miriam was there. I believe God's purpose, whatever the mother's purpose, I'm sure that God's purpose, or I know God's purpose is being worked out here. This family are trusting in the providence of God. The God who sits in the heavens, and the God who laughs, who shall have Pharaoh and all the Egyptians in derision. What remarkable providence is at the right time, at the right place, a Hebrew baby. And then Miriam goes to get any Hebrew woman who will look after the baby. Any? No, no. She goes for the mother. Shall I go and ask one of the Hebrews? Oh, yes, yes. And the girl went and got the baby's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said, you take him and nurse him for me, and I'll pay you. What mother was paid, ever paid, to do her duty, and what her natural desire is, to look after this child, and to bring him up. So Moses was brought up a Hebrew. by this Levite woman and her husband. And the child grew, and he was a Hebrew through and through. These are the formative years for Moses. So Moses, when he becomes a boy, a strong boy, a young lad, a young man, what is he? He's a Hebrew. But Pharaoh's daughter took him, adopted him, if you like. And she said, he is my son. And she named him Moses. I have drawn him out of the water, and that's what the name means. And so this Hebrew boy, listen, this Hebrew boy becomes a prince, the prince of Egypt. Who would have thought it? Who could have arranged it? Acts 7 speaks of it. Hebrews 11 speaks of it. Exodus is speaking of it. It's Psalm 2. How wonderful are God's ways. God is sovereign over the hearts of kings. The Lord's heart, the king's heart is in the Lord's hand. He turns it whithersoever he will. The Egyptians named their enemy. The Egyptians named the man who was going to be their destroyer. And the time is telescoped because the purposes of God are now working out. We're not told how Moses was brought up and all the ins and outs of that, just like Christ's life. The history jumps now right to the fulfillment of the covenant purposes of God. This is an amazing thing. This God is our God, brother and sister. Let us rejoice in him. Let us rest in him. Let us cast ourselves upon him and go on today, however insignificant our lives, looking to the Lord in his providence and his mercy. God's ways are beyond comprehension. But this God who laughs at the pagans, who want to destroy him. Look at Saul of Tarsus, out to destroy the Christ, and he is humbled under Christ, and he is converted to Jesus. Well, this is the lesson I see here. Unbeliever, this God has you in his hands. Your breath is in his hands. You think you are the master and the captain. You think you can control events. You think you're doing what you want. Satan is after you, but God is overall sovereign. The best you can do, the most sensible thing you can do, is fall at his feet now through Jesus Christ and cry out for mercy and cast yourself not only on his providence, but his grace and his mercy and his love and his goodness, the blood of Christ to wash you. Take away all your rebellions and sins. Read Psalm 2. The Lord shall dash him in pieces like a potter's vessel. Kiss the Son, embrace him, lest you perish. This is the essence of Psalm 2, and it's the lessons of Exodus 2, 1-10. God is sovereign. His purposes center in this one little baby, but they blossom to the glorious covenant of Christ and the salvation of thousands of millions throughout the whole world. God's purposes, though they hang on the slightest hair thread, shall ripen fast. Let it be our confidence, brother and sister. Unbeliever, let it be your conviction and your conversion. For Christ's sake. Amen. I'd like to close by reading a hymn to you, which I will now do. Here's the hymn. It's by Paul Carethart and is translated by John Wesley. Away my needless fears and doubts no longer mine. A ray of heavenly light appears, a messenger divine. Thrice comfortable hope that calms my stormy breast. My Father's hand prepares the cup, and what he wills is best. He knows whate'er I want. He sees my helplessness. And always readier is to grant than we to ask his grace. My fearful heart, he reads, secures my soul from harms. Well, underneath his mercy spreads its everlasting arms. Now here's the punchline. The fictitious powers of chance and fortune I defy. My life's minutest circumstance is subject to his eye. Oh, might I doubt no more, but in his pleasure rest, whose wisdom, love, and truth and power engage to make me blessed. Did you hear it, brother? Did you hear it, sister? The fictitious powers of chance and fortune I defy. My life's minutest circumstance is subject to his eye. God is ruling our lives in the smallest detail, the most insignificant part of it. And he's working his eternal purpose out for his glory and for our everlasting good.